I'm still here, forgive me. All righty. So thanks for agreeing to talk with me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
Excellent. So let me set one more level here.
You still need me to talk?
No, we're set. We're set. Can you hear me? So, feel free to. Are you recording this as well?
Yeah, I don't see why I'll do anything with it. I used to be much more professional at it, so maybe I'll just take your recording, but
I don't know about that,
we'll
but
see.
you're welcome to. What I'll do is I'll publish the raw file. I'll just host it on my blog and let you know where it is, if that's okay. And you're welcome to cut it up and use it however you want. What I hope to do is to record our conversation. I'll eventually release the entire conversation in one location, and then I'll include some of our conversation where it makes sense in with my K-12 online presentation. So there'll be an original and sort of a remixed version down, and then you're free to do whatever you want with whatever you want.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yeah, totally. That sounds great.
Excellent, excellent. Well, let's get started then. First of all, thank you for your time. I appreciate you. I hope you're not staying up late on account of me.
No, it's only 9:30 here, so I'm good.
Okay, great, great. Well, Jabiz, let's start by having you tell us who you are and what you do, where you do it, where you are at the moment, what time it is, and how we know each other.
Okay. My name is Jabiz Raisdana. I'm an international school teacher who is currently working in Doha in Qatar in the Middle East. I'm currently the K through 6 EAL, or English as an Additional Language coordinator or teacher. I'm the only ESL teacher there, so I'm working with about 12 different teachers working with K through 12. Although my background is in ESL, I primarily work in middle school. I've worked in Malaysia. I've worked here in Doha. I've worked in New York City, as well as a 2-year stint with Peace Corps in Mozambique. Let's see, that cover all the things. How do we know each other? I guess I know you through Twitter. I don't know other than that. I've read your blog here and there. I don't even know where you are in the US. So maybe you can fill me in on that.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I'm in Northern Colorado, and
Okay.
I work for one school district in Northern Colorado and live a little bit further north. So I have been here pretty much my whole career. And yeah, I think I met you via Twitter, met in air quotes, right?
Yeah.
And that's where we are, and that's the state. And I would say that in some ways we are in community as much as anybody's in community online. And that's what I was hoping we could talk a little bit more about. Uh-oh. Still there? Are you there?
The beauty of Skype.
Yeah, isn't that grand? Excuse me. Well, that's not a big deal. If we drop out, we'll just reconnect and we can edit those out. It's not a big thing. So, don't know where I lost you, but what I was saying was that the reason why I wanted to contact you and talk a little bit is that I think we're as in community, in air quotes, as anybody else, and that's what I wanted to talk to you about. My presentation for K-12 Online is called The Lie of Community. And the goal there is not to say that what we do online is that we're lying, but that perhaps we misunderstand sometimes the nature of our online communities. And if we understand what they are and what they do and how they work, and even if they count as, again, air quotes, communities, we can use them better for the benefit of our kids. And you had started posting some things on Twitter a little while back that I thought really fit in with the gist of the presentation, and it ended up being a blog post that you wrote on your blog about, I think, learning 2.009. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how you were feeling when you wrote that post and sort of where that came out of.
Yeah, I mean, I think something I'm grappling with right now is the difference between the concept of community and network. Mm-hmm. And after having spent some time with, you know, people that I, again, air quote, had met on Twitter or who read blogs I'd read, I spent time actually face-to-face with them at this conference in Shanghai. And I started making connections that these people that I was interacting with in real, you know, real life, when I came back, the relationship I had with them online became much more authentic to me. They felt like a much more organic sense of community, whereas people who I hadn't met still remained kind of this ambiguous network. And so I started thinking about what is community, you know, and how, like you said, is it a false sense of community? Because it's one thing to, you know, you have someone who you know or respect and you read their blog, and then you look at their Twitter followers and you just start following their followers just to get a sense. And then next thing you know, we're all kind of following the same people, you know? And you look at the little avatars or whatever, and you realize there's a large, we just share the similar people, but does that make us one large community? And I guess the thing I'm starting to think about is it really doesn't, because until you start to cultivate one-on-one relationships, whether it's online or if you're lucky enough in person, that's when the community starts to build. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes total sense. And it's sort of exactly what I'm interested in, is this difference between, say, a virtual community of folks who know each other through writing or posting, as opposed to people who know each other through sort of more traditional, you know, face-to-face or professional or personal relationships. And you had tweeted something when you came, I'm not sure if it was just before or just after the conference, but you wrote in a tweet, sometimes it just feels like we barely make real life connections. Why are we making digital ones? But then who says one is more important than the other? Do you remember that tweet?
I don't remember the exact tweet, but I remember, you know, that concept is kind of, I'm constantly thinking about it. It just seems like, you know, how are we going to define community? If a community is a group of people who are interacting with similar beliefs or interests or whatever brings us together, it feels like the online community, and to use the term, you know, edu bloggers or whatever, feels we, the only thing we really have in common, or the only thing we really share with each other, is this kind of concept of edutech, right? Mm-hmm. So we all have this in common, and that's what brings us all together. But the reality is we can have much more dynamic relationships if we just kind of open up a little bit. So the thing I've been dealing with the last couple of, you know, since I got back, is why, maybe you can answer this, do you think people kind of, how much information do people want to share to be able to kind of make it more sense of community, rather than, you know, okay, we're all professionals, we're all educators, so let's just communicate on that kind of surface level?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I don't have the answer. I mean, it's the question that I continually struggle with, right, is how much of my personal life and how much of my professional life should I put out there? Where do those blend? Where does one end? Where does one start? And at what point do the folks that I have professional relationships with, do they become, quote, again, air quotes, friends, right? That's the social networking term du jour, is we have all these friends. But friendship is a, I don't know, it's a lot more complicated than clicking a box, right? You talked a little bit about community and you talked a little bit about networks. Could you talk a little bit about your understanding of or your thoughts about communities versus networks, or are they a versus relationship?
I mean, I'm just kind of letting that sink in. I guess I see a network as a place where you turn to for and support, and you know, it's kind of loosely bound on, like we said, these kind of ideas of knowledge and okay, how are we going to exchange information and knowledge, you know, from one node to the other? But a community just seems like a much more personal place where there's just a level of trust that you don't get in the network, right? So the community is a place where you go. And I'm not saying an online community. I'm saying in general, community is a place where you want to go and just kind of be able to be yourself and be accepted because you know that there's like-minded people there. So you're not afraid of overstepping a bound or saying something that might offend because they're your community. So then when I kind of venture out into this network, I'm always just kind of worried, you know, am I going to make a comment or am I going to send a tweet that might be a little too, you know, political for one person or am I going to say something that's going to bore someone? Whereas reality, you know, maybe instead of having 277 followers on Twitter that I don't really know, would it be more beneficial to have 20 that I know very well and I interact with, that I have Skype calls with, you know? And so I'm just trying to figure out what's more advantageous to me for my personal learning. Do I need a community of small, like-minded people that I know I'm not going to offend, I can be myself? Or am I just a member of a network that, you know, people are going to see my tweets and every once in a while just say, oh, he's saying that again. So that's what I'm trying to deal with now, you know?
Yeah, no, I know exactly. I mean, it's a struggle. And how are you making those decisions? I mean, what are you deciding about how many people you follow or where you follow or where you get your information or how you use, say, Twitter as a tool versus a community conversation space? Talk a little bit about that.
But I'm always amazed that I'm not losing followers by the post because I actually don't put that much on Twitter. I'm always putting stuff about, you know, music I like or, you know, I'm a very actively politically, and so I try not to post stuff that's completely one-sided. But someone tweeted the other night and said, oh, you know, I wish that people would leave politics off Twitter. Where it's like, well, if you're a member of a community, how can you possibly do that? How can it be something that's so ingrained? I mean, politics is community, you know, so how can you not have those discussions? And I understand that 140 characters is no, you know, it's not the right venue for that kind of discussion, but it could lead to other things. And so, I don't know, the most interesting responses I usually get are things that are not based on edutech, you know? I mean, we all love to get the cool new tool or the tweet about an article that, you know, we probably all already read and it goes around a million.
Hey.
Hey. Okay.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm here.
Excellent. Not a problem. Don't worry about it.
Everything hey, so up. Stop me if I feel like I'm kind of just rambling here. So stop me.
No, you're not. And I will. You're talking about what I want to talk about. And I think yeah. hearing.
So I'd love to hear your thoughts too. So it's more of a conversation as opposed to like an interview, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. No. Forgive me. Yeah. Yeah. Don't worry. I won't make it completely one-sided. But as we left off, you were starting to talk about how you make those decisions and maybe to you what you think is appropriate and isn't appropriate in an online space.
Yeah. I mean, for making decisions, I think it's important to be flexible, you know, and like as your network community, whatever you want to call it, as it grows, in my blog post, I kind of made an analogy of a garden, right? And so you need to tend it and prune and, you know, mulch, or I don't know all the terms, but you need to kind of make sure that the people that are part of your community are there for a reason. You know, I think when I first started, when I was new to this, because I'm not really a tech guy, I'm more, you know, I'm just an English teacher. I wanted to...
Don't say just an English teacher, man.
I know.
I'm just an English teacher. Yeah, it's a big deal.
Well, I get the feeling I'm a teacher who blogs. I'm a blogger who's teaching, you know. So, but I wanted to know all the names, and I wanted to know what everyone was doing. It was important to me to be a part of this network, because it kind of validated what I was doing and my thoughts. But now, as I'm getting more comfortable and, you know, actually meeting some of these people whose blogs I've been reading, I'm realizing they're doing the same thing. So it's not a matter of finding, you know, working up ladder of respectability in the blog and doing your thing and figuring out people who are like-minded and can help you. And I'm starting to realize out of the, I don't know, maybe 100 or 50 or so blogs that I read and the people I follow on Twitter, there's about 10 people who I look forward to when their blog comes in. And I'm like, yes, this guy, I know he's going to write something good. I'm not going to skim it, and I'm going to wait to have time to read it. Whereas a lot of the stuff, I'll just say, okay, skim, 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 skim. And so the question is, how valid are those people that you're just skimming? Even if, you know, they're huge names and they've written books and stuff, if they're not bringing anything new to the to my table, then why are they part of my community? So those are the types of questions I'm asking myself is, I don't want to miss out, you know? I'm sure, I mean, I respect them, and I know they're saying really important things, but if they're smaller names or people who I share a common interest with and I relate to, I think they're a more valid part of my community, of my online community.
So it's really about value to you, and that value might be professional, but it might also be personal, right? I mean, it might be some sort of relational or emotive value as opposed to just a, this person helps me do my job better.
I have a real hard time separating the two. And,
okay.
You know, I have a real hard time separating where I end and where the teacher starts, because I wouldn't be the type of teacher I am if I wasn't the type of person I am. And so that's another thing I'm always constantly struggling with. And I don't know if you heard what happened to me, but I had some issues with my job last year, and I think this idea of being able to deal with that. You know, I'm very open, and I believe if we're going to be using these tools, these social networking tools, and this whole idea of community and networking, then we have to be open and we have to be honest. And to hide behind a veneer of this is my professional self and this is my personal self, that's not entering into a community, honestly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going in with two different faces. That's kind of a mask. So I believe in being as open and honest as you can and just hopefully being accepted for that within the community. But I don't know how other people feel about that, because they definitely get a sense sometimes there's issues that, you know, doesn't have a place in this network.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I struggle with it too. I mean, everything from, you know, where does that me end and where does that teacher begin, and when am I working and when am I not working? And if I like to write and I'm writing about something that's useful professionally, but I'm putting a personal spin on it, is that work writing or is that personal writing? And the way that I'm connecting to other folks in the various communities that I'm involved in, I think it's the same issue, right? I mean, am I connecting to some of the folks that I really, really resonate with as writers and teachers because I'm interested in their professional ideas or because I'm resonating with them as people? And I don't think it's an either or. I think it's some of both. But yeah, I don't have any really good answers. That's sort of one of the conceits of this presentation, is that I'm trying to frame it as, I think there's a bunch of really good questions. I mean, I think there are some limits to what I share professionally or what I share in public, but not necessarily, you know, offline, online. There's probably some different limits there. And I think I'm trying to navigate that as anybody else is. You talked about a little bit about sort of as you've emerged and grown as a blogger, some of the things that you've changed your thinking on. I want to go back to a couple of those if I can. You said that sort of your blogging or the way you've approached the blog or the blogs you read has changed as you've sort of changed your reason for connecting. I get the sense that a lot of bloggers go through that stage of identifying a few key people that are really useful to them or important to them for whatever reason, might be personal, might be professional, might be both, and they want to very much be a part of those people's communities. And then over time, this idea of my own or your own network or community emerges, and you change the way, and I don't necessarily mean you, I think this happened to me too, you change the way you connect, you change the way you read to sort of center back on yourself as opposed to centering on somebody else. Do you see what I'm talking about there? Do you see any of that?
Yeah, I think you put it very, very clear kind of succinct way. It's this idea that you sometimes forget that the people who have been doing this for a while and are bigger names and are, you know, kind of the vanguard of the movement, if you will. These people they have their own communities, and it's almost selfish to think that you can just jump into their communities, you know? Like, a lot of times I'll see people just kind of go back and forth on Twitter, you know, and I'll throw in my 2 cents just for fun and then get kind of upset when they don't respond. Well, it's like, you know what, if you had every Joe Schmo just always kind of throwing stuff at you, it'd be overwhelming as well. So it's this idea that you make the connections. Just, it takes time. I was actually Twittering with Alec Kouros, I think is his name. And he's someone that I really respect because it's the same, you know, he seems to be someone who's way out front doing a lot of amazing work. But at the same time, he takes the time to kind of, you know, come down to with the little people, so to speak. You know? And that's something he said the other day that I found really refreshing. He's like, it just takes time. You know, it's like any other relationship in real life or face to face. You're not just going to walk into a room with 25 professionals and then next thing you know, you're best friends. You know, it takes time. And even in schools, we work with people for 3, 4, 5, 6 years. And out of all the teachers you work with, you're not going to be, you know, you're not going to invite every single person home for dinner. But at the end of the day, you know, it's those people that you have lunch with, it's those people that you talk with and talk about your classroom with and talk about what's going on in your life with. Those are the people that end up being part of your community. And I honestly think that if you have a network, a professional network, that's one thing. And I'm not going to devalue that. I think that's important. But if you honestly want to build online communities, there has to be kind of a breaking down of those walls. You can't go into it and just think I'm going to have a professional community. I don't think you can.
So to you, and I'm asking, I think, to try to define this idea a little better. To you, your community, for lack of a better term, is comprised of elements of your network that you've sort of gone, I don't want to say to the next level with, because that sounds weird, but do you know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, and you know, I think the way you said it is right, but I don't really feel like I have a community right now. I'm kind of in that nebulous stage. I'm trying to take it to that level. But yeah, I mean, I would definitely say,
go ahead.
Of all the people that I had been following, this trip to Shanghai was kind of the eye opener for me, because it was people that I never met. But then as soon as we got there, you know, we were out having dinner and talking, and I felt like I already knew them because of the interactions we had online, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely think that I am in the process of kind of carving out my community from my network.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually really helpful to me, actually. Thank you. So you've mentioned kids a little bit, and we've talked a little bit about school, and we do school. That's what we do. So I have to ask and move in this direction a little bit, but are we as teachers needing to prepare kids to make these sorts of communities, these sorts of networks, or are we doing this sort of on the sidelines and it may or may not be useful to school or to people in general? I mean, are there larger lessons here that we should be communicating to our kids or students?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't want to get kind of philosophical and tangential on this, but it's like, I mean, ultimately, especially in this day and age where information is readily available, I think that's one of the main reasons for kids going to school, right? I mean, they can get information anywhere. So I think it's important for them to learn how to interact with other people and kind of build a sense of community, because it feels like in the modern age, you get this sense of alienation a lot, you know? So if you have kids who, as adolescents or young people, have a hard time meeting people anyway, you know, it's part of a job to kind of teach them how to connect with other people, especially when it's so easy. But one thing I've been thinking about a lot lately is also, is why are we focusing so much on having, I know this may be sacrilegious, but why are we focusing so much on having kids collaborate and communicate and connect with people from all over the world, when it seems like when you have a group of 25 kids sitting in a classroom staring at each other,
yeah,
you're creating a sense of community in that room.
Yeah,
you know,
no,
without the computer, without these tools.
I don't think that's sacrilegious at all. I've always wondered that. It seemed like it was easier to make connections with people further away or farther away. And sometimes in that we lose the value of our local community. And I think sort of for me, the first fleshing out of my learning network was the national and international connections to folks with whom I had some commonalities. And where I'm going back now is I'm trying to bridge those same gulfs of distance, again in air quotes, with people who are in my district or in my school or in my town. It's a weird paradox to me that this technology has made it easier to connect, three quarters of the way around the world, but we don't get all that invested in, at least I haven't seen it, in the people who are like three quarters of a mile down the road. And I don't know how we bridge that, but it seems like it's easier now to talk to the people that we go to school with when it's convenient for us. We can use our networks to build relationships locally. And I see that as an underutilized, this is a network term, but underutilized capacity, right? We're as interested in talking to far away as we are, or less interested actually in talking close up as we are as in talking far away. And I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's because it feels safer, right? Because you're ultimately kind of more in control of the presentation you're making, either through blogs or Twitter or even a Skype call to someone you've never met who's halfway across the world, as opposed to the person sitting right in front of you. You know, because the person sitting right in front of you can look at your body language and the way you carry yourself. And those things they think are really important in the community, especially for teenagers, you know? And so here for them, they can create these kind of not alternative personalities, but they don't necessarily, they're more in control of the way they present themselves online than they are as a person for sure. And so it becomes easier. But I think as teachers, we have a responsibility to teach them how to do both. You know,
yeah,
how
I agree
to
with you.
Kind of create that sense of community within the classroom and then kind of expand. That's always been my philosophy in the classroom. Start with building that sense of community, using these tools within the classroom, you know. As a writer, I think it's having that community of writers is very important. People who critically take your work and edit and critique and comment and give you feedback. So you don't have to have peer editors, you know, on another continent. You can have peer editors right in your classroom still using these tools. But it's very important, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it is our responsibility. Okay, cool. Let's see. There was another question I wanted to ask you, and I've written it down. Hang on a sec. Let me grab it. So we quote, again, air quotes, I'm popular with, or I'm a fan of the air quotes today. We share a network or a community in some degree. But I would venture that our networks are very, very different. I would venture that our communities are very, very different. I think our politics are different. But all those things within our shared network, there's all these different contexts and situations that we don't share. Is there still value in us being in community in the way that we are? Is that useful? How do we bridge those contexts is, I guess, what I'm trying to get to. It seems to me that that is a problem, but it's also an opportunity. And what do you think about that? I should stop asking the question and let you answer. Excellent. So I'm not sure if you heard any of my question, because I'm not quite sure when you dropped out.
No, you were going somewhere kind of interesting. I think you were talking about the fact that we share overlapping communities and something like that, and then it cut off.
Yeah, so well, we have this overlapping community somewhat. I mean, we read a few of the same blogs. We're involved in a few of the same conversations. Every now and again, we tweet back and forth. I don't really know your full network. You don't really know mine. I guess I wonder about the value of the communication with those limitations, or if those matter at all. You know, like does it matter that you're nested in your contexts and communities, and I'm nested in mine? Is the bridge of our network enough, or I mean, is this sort of tilting at windmills to even bother trying to connect across all these different contextual differences? Speak to that a little bit.
I'm trying to get my head around what you're saying. Can you just rephrase it just a little bit?
It's not a very well articulated question. We're nested in very different contexts and communities. You know, we have a lot of differences. I don't know your background and you don't know mine. And I think the same is true of most of the folks with which I interact online. We get the piece of themselves that they're sharing in whatever venue they're sharing it in. Is there still value in the connection? Is there still value in sharing? Or should we be focusing on the folks with which we share more context, or should we be working to fill in the contextual gaps? I guess I'm just wondering, is it worth it to try to communicate and try to be in community across all these gulfs?
Wow, yeah, I wish you could replay that because you said some great things. Yeah, I think both have value, right? I mean, obviously, to have kind of a non-contextualized connection with people that exchange information through a network is valuable, right? Because that's, I think Lance Fisher during the session said something important. He said, if you go through your Google Reader or whatever and you just have 1,000 things you can't get through them and you wipe them all out, what's important is going to come back around, right? So having these networks that are somewhat, I think you use the word bridged, if something is really important or valuable, it's going to come around. But what's bothering me is the kind of stagnation that can happen in a network like that, where, you know, you read 10 different blogs and 10 different people are just kind of linking to each other and quoting each other.
Oh.
More like communities. And I think we're just kind of saying the same over again, but.
And I'm losing you. So if you can hear me, I think we'll need to pick you back up.
Hello?
Hey, that was my turn to have a Skype
call. I wonder why we keep cutting out. I wonder why we keep cutting out like that.
I don't know. Silly internet. I'm not at all sure, to be honest with you, but here we are. So I guess I want to ask you one last question. I don't want to tie up too much more of your time, but I've really enjoyed actually listening and talking with you, so I hope we can do this again. But what advice would you have to teachers or to anybody, learners, teachers, just people, in terms of helping them to get to the place sort of where I think you are, and I think you've just gotten there, that it's not about the exterior connections, it's about the value of the connections to you. Like, how would you advise people or what would you tell them to do to help them build their own communities and networks online?
I think it would be patient, first of all. I'm a very impatient person. I think when I get excited about something, I just find kind of instant gratification, and I realize that, you know, like all relationships, online relationships take time. So that's definitely a big one. And two, you have to be proactive. You know, you can't just kind of expect everyone to kind of come to you. You have to go out there and comment on people's blogs and respond to tweets that seem interesting, and just kind of engage people in conversations, you know? I think that's a good way of looking at it. Anytime you want community, it's not about just listening or just throwing your voice out there. It's about creating conversations. You just said, you know, how you get this call, and I think I totally did too. I think how interesting it would be if we put like a kind of a little Twitter game out there that forced two people who never really connected to just call each other on Skype and talk for 10 minutes.
like Skype speed dating. I like it. I like it. That could be fun.
Actually. Yeah, just kind of, you know, tweets are so easy, and, you know, and it's a great way to kind of create social relationships and exchange information, but it really doesn't go much deeper than that. So things like that, you know, it's like, hey, call me on Skype. And it's such an easy way to connect. And I think even after this hour-long phone call, the next time I read your blog or see you doing something on Twitter, we're going to have a different relationship than we did before this call, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think the more of these you have with people, the more you fill in what you call kind of those contextual clues of who we are. And the better kind of picture we have of who we are as people, not as teachers or, you know, the professional side, just as people, the more satisfying communities we can be involved in. And then ultimately, you know, if we want to get really kind of utopian here, we can start connecting those communities, right? Because like you said, we share a lot of kind of network notes. So if you're kind of have a tight-knit community within here, and then you realize a little common, you can say, hey, you should be talking to this person and that person. And that's when we start kind of really communicating and really kind of sharing not just information, but ideas and goals and plans and all that kind of stuff. I don't know. I'm rambling now.
No, you're not. I see a lot of what I try to do on the network as making those connections. I know a lot of really smart people, and I really, really like it when they know each other. So I try to do that a lot. I derive sort of excitement in being able to put person A with person B, because I know they really, really value each other. And so I try to do that whenever I can. Let me ask you a side question. I guess it's a presentation about lies. I guess I lied to you. It wasn't my last question. You said something about Twitter that made me think. I struggle with Twitter a lot because I find the value in the immediate connection, the fastness, the low level or barrier to entry, like, to be really valuable. But it also, I think, sucks the life out of a more sustained writing community. At least it does for me. Do you think it's ultimately worth it, or do you think it's actually more trouble than it's worth, Twitter as a tool?
There was a New York Times article a while back, and someone had created a kind of a visual quote, and it said something like, you know, if you look at someone's Twitter or Facebook for a day, you get a glimpse of who they are. If you follow them for a month or so, it's more like a short story and a novel, or that transgression. I think Twitter is just like that. You know, it gives you a glimpse of what people are doing. And for me, if all they're doing is professional stuff, then that's the glimpse I get. You know, it's when people kind of let their guard down and kind of share a little bit more is when you start realizing who these people really can be. But I think the same can be said for blogging. You know, it's a blog is really just a glorified thing, right? Or vice versa, the microblogging idea. It just depends on what kind of information you're putting out there, what it is you're sharing, and how people connect to it. It's ultimately going to make it valuable or invaluable. But, you know, before Twitter, I would say I had, you know, zero audience. Like, my blog, I was writing for myself, and maybe two people were reading it.
Sure.
Now, maybe now after Twitter, six people are reading it. But at the same time, it gives, you know, it's still that idea that it is an in. It's kind of like an on-ramp onto a major highway. Now, how you kind of navigate yourself on that highway for you, but it's going to get you on there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I think as a tool for beginners, Twitter is a great place to start building relationships.
Yeah, the thing that freaks me out about Twitter is a lot of people stop there, and I found personally that my blog writing and me as a writer, and I get most of my heavy thinking done, you know, in long-form writing. I think it's hurt my exigence a little bit. It sort of sucked the desire to write out because I can just tweet. So that's something I struggle with. I don't know. I agree with you about the value of it in terms of it's worth what people put into it, but I don't know. I don't want to take any more of your time. I know it's getting late for you. I've enjoyed chatting with you. I hope we get to do it again. Any last words?
No. I mean, I don't want to just ramble on. Yeah, it's really good talking to you too. And I think the more of these types of conversations we have, then the stronger at least our ties in this network are going to be. And so hopefully this will be beneficial for whoever's going to be listening or however you incorporate it into your presentation.
Oh, I think it's very valuable. So I thank you.
All right.